20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packers fans? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL, and you can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. It is great to be back with you post-vacation, and it's even better to be back chatting with the one and only Justice Mosqueda. You can find him on social media at JUMOSQ, and of course, acmepackingcompany.com. Justice, it was an eventful week, which I'm going to let you do a lot of the heavy lifting because I'm still catching up on everything that has happened. We have a new special teams coordinator. Of course, the NFL Combine happened. Goody spoke. Rich Bisaccia is coaching somewhere else, apparently. We've had franchise tenders. We've had restricted free agents non-tendered by Green Bay. We will get to all of it through the course of today's show. But first and foremost, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great. I can't complain. Andy, I don't know if you saw this. I'm trying to do the math on where you would have been in like 1998, but, or what age you would have been 1998.
I was around 14 to 15 years old, just to age myself.
So were you too old for Pokemon? Were you too old for the beginning of Pokemon?
I was too old for the beginning of Pokemon. I was a huge sports card collector growing up. I would do sports like card shows, and my friend and I would have like the cases and be selling cards at the events and do a table and spend our whole weekends doing that stuff. But I was just that it was so for me, it was sports cards, and then like Pogs came along, and I didn't do anything with Pogs, and then Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh were sort of the next thing, and I was just on the outside of that, so never got into it. My kids have a decent amount of Pokemon cards, but that's as close as I get.
So they just drop. I don't have a Switch, but Addy's got a Switch. And they just dropped the remakes of the original games for like $20 on the Switch. So I was babysitting my friend's kids. And every time we babysit, I'm just playing that game with them now. And I'm like, sweet.
Love it.
Let's go.
You get a Tecmo Bowl or a Tecmo Super Bowl remake, you know, something that comes out like that. It's always epic. I always love it. Yeah. And like I said, I was just on the outside of that. I was a big Final Fantasy guy. So I'll try to go back and play, you know, Final Fantasy VII every once in a while just to get that hidden nostalgia or things like that. But yeah, just on the outside of Pokemon, I'm sure if I were
I was like kindergarten. I mean, yeah, streets were shaking.
Yes.
Andy, when this thing dropped.
Very much so. So yeah, I was just on the outside, but like I said, had I been just a couple years younger, probably would have completely taken over my life. So I probably wouldn't be here. I probably would be like doing, you know, ripping Pokemon cards on a Pokemon channel or something. Probably what I'd be doing. All right, let's get into it. We've got a lot to go over. Let's start with the fact that the Packers have a new special teams coordinator. Cam Accord, interesting hire for Green Bay. Like I said, I'm going to let you do a lot of the heavy lifting. I'm going to do a lot of deep diving in this. This and the NFLPA report cards are something that I want to spend a lot of time on. So I'm going to probably do that in a little bit deeper dive in some coming days. But I'll start with you, Justice. Tell me everything that I should know and everyone else should know about Cam Accord.
Well, first of all, I get to do it finally after me mispronouncing things for years Accord? On the show. It's Accord.
I knew that, and I still said it wrong for some reason. I don't know. It just still, Accord seems like it should be it, but it's Accord. Yeah, you're right.
He's from Mississippi. That matters because he's a I'm spacing on his name. Patriots former special teams guy, Joe Judge.
Yep.
Joe Judge is a Mississippi guy. People don't necessarily think about him in that way. You have to remember he came up from Mississippi, went to school in Mississippi. He was actually going to take the Mississippi State job before he got the New York Giants offer. And now Joe Judge is back down at Ole Miss now. So he's like Mississippi guy through and through. The only reason I know this is because when we were XFL 2020 and we were testing our special teams rules, one of them being the dynamic kickoff that the NFL has completely ripped off. Shout out to Sam Schwartz team for making it. We actually tested those at JUCO's down in Mississippi. So he's a Joe Judge guy. Your mileage will vary whether you think that's a good thing or a bad thing, depending on your perspective of Joe Judge. He certainly has a lot of people who like him and a lot of people who don't. There's been a lot of numbers floating around. I am more inclined to look at the DVOA numbers The DVOA numbers do a lot better job of taking into account of things that they call hidden yards, which are like your ability to make a team miss field goals, right? Having that counted, field position on like punts and returns and field goals, and not just looking at like percentage and stuff like that. Acord's history when he's been a special teams coordinator. And Andy, I'm kicking myself in the butt because every single guy that the Packers brought in was a guy that you and I brought up other than Acord, because Acord was the cut. I looked at guys who have been, had been coordinators in the league either of the past 2 years, and he was 3 years
right before that.
Right. Yeah. Right on the cutoff. Dang it. So 2020, the Patriots were first in DVOA. That is great. We love that. 21, they were 18th. 22, they were 32nd. And 23, they were 28th. So if you take his last 3 years and consider, I mean, you could do whatever you want with that data, right? People are going to manipulate it however they want. The way I've seen people talk about it is like the last 3 years, they've averaged 26th in New England. And New England was a program that was pretty good at special teams over Bill Belichick's career. And not all of that was under Belichick. Versace ranked 21st, by the way, in Green Bay. He was not, no matter what people say, he was not the worst. We've been basically finished like 33rd before, right? And it's potentially on the table that that could happen again. The other thing I've seen when people look at that data and want to manipulate it however they want, right? They say 2020, he was in first. He's been first before. That works for me. So was Rich. And then the last way was 32nd and 22 to 28th and 23. And people were like, upward projection. Most of that is tongue in cheek, I think.
Yeah.
There was 1 year his units allowed 3 kickoff returns for touchdowns. That was
fantastic.
Most in the league. That was more than the rest of the league combined. I mean, I think the chops are you worked for Bill. Patriots did a little bit more stuff infrastructure wise, special teams wise. Like, I know people are like, well, Matthew Slater gave a glowing report on Acord. I'm like, do you guys see a Matthew Slater here? Like, that's a guy who played like 12 years in the league and basically didn't play an offensive snap.
Right.
We're dead last in the NFL in using offensive players on special teams. Like, you can look at Sabian and Romeo. They're like literally in the thousands in terms of how many snaps they played on special teams in the NFL. We don't use receivers and stuff. Nope. So things could change. I'm inclined to just, this is a, I think, not an I know, right? I'm inclined to believe Bisaccia didn't walk away because things were like, hey, things are going to get changed for the better. I know people were like, well, he's spent a lot of time in South Carolina, wants to be closer to his family, all that stuff. I'm sure that had a part of it. Doubt he just learned where South Carolina was on the map this year and was working in places like Vegas, which are even further away now. So we'll see. The Clemson thing is really interesting. They had like the second highest. We brought him up, the special teams coordinator in Clemson, who doubled as their DBs coach or cornerbacks coach now. He used to be DBs, then only was cornerbacks and got the special teams title. He was a guy who worked under John Harbaugh and Dave Tomb, two very well-respected guys in with the Philadelphia Eagles way back in the day, right? Yep. Before he kind of got out of special teams and started doing more DB stuff. Thought it was really interesting. The reporting on this stuff said that the Board of Trustees had to approve this. They don't do that for every coach. So I'm inclined to believe this is a we have to ask them to spend more money type of thing. So I don't think he's going to
position maybe.
Yeah, I think what's going to end up happening is the special teams coordinator is just going to end up being the DB's coach again. And then Rich is going to, but he's still going to get paid like this special teams coordinator because of his money. So now you got to come up with the extra money for a special teams coordinator, which Clemson's got the money. They are amazing at fundraising. The guy who ran the fundraising at Clemson when they were going to national titles and stuff and kind of built that foundation of basically extracting money out of boosters in Atlanta is now the AD at Miami. And that's why they're kind of gotten that stuff turned around. Guys,
right.
Everything comes down to money. I don't know if you guys have realized this yet. I think it's interesting. Obviously, there's ties there. I've had people pontificate what it means, ask me those kinds of questions. I mean, I just think this is going to be the tough pill to swallow. I think we are his Boston College for Jeff Hafley. right? Where it's like, ah, where do I see myself in a couple of years?
Right.
And am I getting enough support here? Or do I need to go reset my coaching clock somewhere else? Because I do think he wants to coach for a long time. Those guys can, like Danny Smith has got like 15 years on Rich Versace. He just got hired as a brand new special teams coordinator. These guys can last forever. Coaches can pretty much do it until they drop for the most part. So,
would it surprise you if Passaccio was coaching in the NFL as a special teams coordinator again in 2027? No, not at all. No. Same here.
And I think that, you know, he looked at how long was DeCamillis, with South Carolina. I mean, I think 2 years.
Yeah.
So, I mean, 2028. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you can do that for sure.
Could easily.
I mean, Rich is going to be in demand. That's not, I'm worried about that. I do think that that's going to be interesting for the believers who are like, oh, close to family is just that, right? Where it's like, oh, then he like leaves for the Chargers job. Wait, that's further away from his family, Andy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
but he's a good soldier. I don't think like he's probably going to have some introductory press conference where he talks about this. I don't think he's going to throw anyone under the bus. Like he didn't when Matt wouldn't let him use the offensive lineman on field goal protection. So,
right.
He kind of, you know, ate crap, and I think he got tired of eating crap. But again, that's just a thought.
It'd be interesting if he did go nuclear on it. I'll say that much right now. If he did decide to, he did decide to throw Green Bay under the bus.
The other thing, too, that I've seen is, like, the fans. Like, dude, Rich doesn't strike me as a guy who's, like, really going on Twitter very much. So, I don't know how much that one holds weight. Like, the Packers are fully fine with giving double middle fingers to the fan base in press conferences. Like, pretty consistently. I don't think that they care about public perception that much.
No, I don't think they do either. And of all people, I don't think Rich would care one iota. I don't think he cared what the media thought. I don't think he wanted to ever be in the press conferences for the most part with the media. No. He tried to keep those pretty short. And I don't think he cared one iota. Didn't even enter his thought process of what the fan base thought of him whatsoever. Most coaches care about what the people in the locker room think about him and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I literally, like, I think that those are like he's such a, from what I've heard, right? I haven't talked to the guy, but from like the players I've talked to, the agents that send their guys to Rich, all that stuff, like, he's so like person to person connection that, like, it doesn't really make sense to me the like fan narrative stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe Acord does come in and things get better, right? Like, we'll see. I think the biggest places that we saw growth under Rich, right? Were coverage units. We've talked about this before. Again, this is why the Packers weren't 32nd in the NFL in special teams under Rich. This past year, punt team, kickoff team, the only team that was better than both of the Packers in both of those units was the Washington Commanders, right? That's a unit where Acord kind of had some struggles. And those were the units that we actually support. I think it's going to be interesting with free agency. I don't know if you want to tie this into like the whole tender situation, but three of the Packers' top five most played special teamers, right? One of them is Chris Brooks, who's basically like the only offensive guy who consistently gets on the field. It'll be interesting to see what they do with that. We haven't gotten confirmation on that, but we have heard Zane Anderson isn't going to get tagged. And then Aaron Mosby, I don't think that they can keep Aaron Mosby. And Aaron Mosby's interesting because he wasn't even on the 53 until week 10, and he was still top five most played special teams player. Like, he really is one of their aces. Here's the issue with Mosby. Mosby's vested now, right? So what that means is if he's on the team in week one, his salary is fully guaranteed. And I don't know if they can do that. They didn't do that this past year. They got him back on the practice squad and then brought him up, right?
I can already tell you, Green Bay's thinking will be, Colin Oliver can do that. Colin Oliver can be that's just not like he can't, would be my guess. He's probably not going to be as good at it as Mosby was on teams.
Mosby's pretty good at it, but it's the sacrifice of the game day spot, right? I mean, it's
exactly,
because he doesn't play defense. He really doesn't. Mosby, I've told you guys this before, right? It's whoever that fifth linebacker is, whether it's Neiman or Welsh. And then for the second half of the season, we use Mosby. Those were like really the only special teams only guys. And I know, again, Rich falls on the sword, right, in the press conference and is like, well, I've never been anywhere where there's only special teams only guys. And then people run up with that and they don't look at actions, Andy. People don't look at people's actions. They're like, oh, that's good enough. Special teams bad.
A lot of things bad. Keeping things status quo bad. Change good. Special teams bad. Special teams coordinator bad. Offensive coordinator bad. But we'll talk about that. That's an interesting one that I do want to get to eventually too. Just a couple things as we wrap up these first ones. One thing I did hear on Acord is that when they did the joint practices, New England and Green Bay this past year, apparently Acord was extremely impressive, high attention to detail. Or was it the year before? Sorry. Whenever he was with
New England. I was going to say, I was like, was he in?
Was it New England in 2020?
He was with the Giants. I know this because I know a guy who went from Baltimore to New York. He was on that staff this past offseason. And Acord wasn't kept by Harbaugh, which, like, I don't know what you want to do with that. I'm sure people will make a big deal about that.
Yeah, I had the year wrong. It was the joint practices in 2023 is when it was Patriots-Packers. So it wasn't this past year. It was 2023. And when Acord was there, apparently he was very impressive. And it caught kind of Green Bay's eye is one thing that I heard there. So, that was one thing I heard. Whether or not he can actually change anything in Green Bay, I'll believe it when I see it, just. But,
On the Harbaugh thing, because I don't think people have even reacted to that. But that's... I mean, it is kind of a sign. I wouldn't make a huge deal out of it. Harbaugh basically just imported his entire special team staff from Baltimore to New York. So I wouldn't make that a huge deal that, like, Acord wasn't kept, even though he was the number two in New York. A lot of times there's some holdovers on staff. You want at least a couple of holdovers, Andy. You don't actually want to do a clean sweep because then guys get in the room. Let's say, like, front office and the coaching staff. Total clean sweep. Oh, well, that doesn't even really happen. The scouts get kept until after the draft, right? But let's say that happens, and then you're a new head coach. It's January 15th or whatever, and you're like, all right, what are these players like? And no one can give you an answer? Not a great situation. That's why you would see guys like Ben Sermons held over from, like, the McCarthy staff to, like, the LaFleur staff and all that stuff. Usually there's one guy who has that crossover. I guess for us it's Covington. I know we haven't officially announced our – coaching staff. It's after the combine. It's happened again, Andy.
Yeah. What did I say last time? Last year was April when it was April 3rd or 4th where they announced it. So we got another month to go. We got plenty of time. But one thing just here too is, unless I'm mistaken, I've not heard anything about an assistant special teams coordinator yet. So that's another kind of key thing to keep an eye on for Green Bay.
Yeah. And I have no leads on that unless they're just going to promote, what's his name, Harkey, the third guy. Yeah.
That's kind of my guess is what will happen.
Just move him from a third to a two and then save the money on not paying a three, I guess. Maybe. I don't know.
Could be. We'll see. But that'll be interesting. And then just to go back to Bisaccia for a moment, Spoon's article over on JS Online, PackersNews.com, it was very interesting, kind of taking a look at that. Apparently some buzz around the combine of maybe, you know, LaFleur and Bisaccia not seeing eye to eye, but apparently that was kind of refuted, but there's still some buzz out there. And then it did seem like he wanted to move closer to home was another piece of that, but go check out Spoon's article. But that was some interesting takeaways from that too.
Andy, sometimes it's not one thing, right? It's one thing after another.
Yeah. So this is not apples to apples, right? But I remember I had a job once and I got promoted into another job after it. And one of the reasons I got promoted was because I did all this stuff in the job previously and they wanted me to come to this new job where I got promoted and do all the stuff that I just did in a new environment because we had just changed a bunch of stuff over. And I remember I was all excited. I got promoted, whatever. And I got there and I realized, oh my God, this is a bigger mess than what the last job that I had was. And it took me forever to clean that whole thing up and remake it entirely. And now I need to do it here. And again, it's a bigger mess than it was before. And I'm just like, I don't know that I have the energy to do this all over again. Like, there could easily just be a case where, like, Rich Bisaccia just got done with the Raiders and kind of remaking that. And all of a sudden he gets to Green Bay and is like, this is a bigger mess. And now I have to, and now I'm the assistant head coach as well. And I have to do an even more, like, sometimes they're just like, all of a sudden you get promoted into a bigger mess than you were expecting. And it's daunting. And it's just like, I've done this already. And I don't know that I have the energy to do it again. I'm not saying that was Rich is, I'm sure, a much stronger willed and smarter and better worker than me or whatever. But there could be a million different reasons why this did not go the way that either Rich or the Packers were expecting.
The NCAA is pushing for 105 man player rosters, and usually 70 can travel for road games, right? So yep. If you really got tired of arguing about like what guys can you have on game day, all this type of stuff, like it gets a little easier when you go from 48 to either 70 for road games or the full 105 for home games, right? So something to think about.
Also, like you've mentioned, extra points, still basic in college football. You've got, no dynamic kickoff unless they've changed.
It's fair catch inside the 20.
Yeah.
25, I think.
Yeah. So there's a lot of changes that have taken place in NFL special teams too. And maybe Rich was just like,
He's had experience in it though.
Who knows? Who knows? There could be a lot of different reasons, but yeah, go check out Spoon's article. He did a great job on that. And then he brought up the non-tendered players, Zane Anderson, Emmanuel Wilson, the two that we know so far. There's still a lot out there. You brought up, Mosby, I can't imagine they're going to tender him. I still go back to the only one to me that is interesting from a, do they tender him or not, is Darian Kennard. He would be the only one where if they view him as a legitimate, like swing tackle, like $3.7 million or whatever it is like a reasonable amount of money for that type of player. And they already gave up a 2027 sixth round pick for him. So that what they're giving up in compensation hasn't even come up yet. So I could see them potentially tendering him on a restricted free agent deal to kind of keep him. But I can't imagine anyone else from actually getting the tender. But to me, guys like Zane Anderson, Emmanuel Wilson, Chris Brooks, Aaron Mosby, any of them could be back. I think it'll be on like an unrestricted deal after they become unrestricted free agents and non-tendered players. We'll be right back.
Yeah, and I think one of the conversations that's really interesting right now, and this is why the Packers are having 2026 meetings and all this stuff about this, right, is figuring out how free agency ties in with the draft, right? Because if you need a tackle, you need a swing tackle. So you're looking at the alternatives. I have now finally, Andy, after a couple of weeks of looking at this, I finally feel comfortable about talking about the offensive line class as a whole. Here's part of the problem. The tackles that I liked and I thought were like mispriced on like the consensus draft board were guys like Blake Miller from Clemson, who was ranked like 160th or something like that when I first started looking at the consensus board after after Micah tore his ACL. I started chipping away at draft stuff. Those guys are all rising. So now it looks like there's kind of seven guys in the draft who can like viably play tackle. Cause guys like Jennings Dunker, he's going to move inside. Brian Parker Jr. He's going to move inside. Isaiah World, it came out that he tore his ACL in the semifinal against, Indiana. There's like seven guys. And then after that, it kind of does get a little spooky. I would probably pull the trigger on Kennard. The other RFA is like, Brooks, you don't need to pay that.
Nope.
Like, there's no world where you need to pay $3.5 million.
No chance
to have Brooks for a year. Like, if he's going to come back, he's going to come back on like literally the league minimum, and then you're going to give him some sort of signing bonus.
Fitzpatrick. And a lot of these guys can get the John Fitzpatrick of what he got last year, which was either league minimum or a little over, and with like what a kicker on signing bonus, which
But like Brooks, like, I think like you can give him like $200,000 as a signing bonus, and you can get him on the league minimum deal.
So what Fitzpatrick got was basically like 1 year, 1.5, a little bit under 1.5, 1.13 base salary, 125,000 signing bonus with 170,000 per game roster bonus tied in, which again was about 1.5 million. I could see a lot of these guys getting like a Zane, if again, depending on what Zane Anderson's value is in free agency, but a Zane, a Chris Brooks, and Emmanuel Wilson, a lot of these guys, to me, that type of deal makes a ton of sense.
Yeah. And Wiley's the other one. I don't think they're going to bring back Emmanuel Wilson because he was already RB. They like Marshawn Lloyd, right? Lloyd wasn't healthy. Wilson was RB4 at the end of the year and he doesn't play teams. So I think if they bring back a back, I think it's going to be Chris Brooks because you can give him their change of pace is this guy's blocking really good. It's their change of pace isn't, you know, this guy can catch swing routes out of the backfield. I don't think that, like, I don't think Cox is coming back. Wiley, I could see it for sure. Mosby's going to be tough. I don't think they can do it. Wilson, I don't think he's coming back. Kennard, you probably should tender him, like we said.
Yep.
And then Brooks, I think you can bring him back on something cheaper. Same thing with, like, Wiley, right? And Anderson, sorry.
Yep. Yeah, those are the interesting decisions. I agree with you on Wilson. I would love Zane back. I don't think they need Zane back, but I would love him back, especially with special teams too.
But it was interesting. Goot said defensive back when they asked him positions for competition. And I was like, that might be Zane's gone. Which, again, if Zane Mosby, Chris Brooks are gone, then, like, Rich is like, dude, I'm having to develop guys every single year. We can't have any consistency here because we have to play. We have to keep Nasir Stackhouse on the 48-man roster to play 5 snaps a game. Like,
can't let him out the door. What would happen if Stackhouse is out the door? You can't let that happen.
I know him, and then, like, Donovan Jennings. Like, we got to start keeping track of their pet project.
Yash Nyman is arguably, like, the only guy I think that's actually worked out. Like, Alex Light didn't work out. Raven Green didn't really work out. Tim Boyle, as much as it pains me to say, didn't really work out. Like, all of these guys that they have kept on as these pet projects, about the only one who has worked in a fairly significant way has been Yash Nyman.
Yeah. I don't think – do we count Benkert? Benkert was QB2.
No, we don't, Kurt. We don't count Benkert.
That was just to make sure Jordan never saw the field, right? I mean, it was kind of a little different thing his rookie year. I guess Travis Glover is kind of that guy.
But he was a draft pick.
But they like him. Yeah.
They do like him.
I mean, Nasir was kind of a draft pick. Like, we paid him a ton of money. Yeah.
There's not much success, like, hit rate on these, like, late round guys. You know, unless you want to argue, like, you know, Rashid Walker.
Jonathan Ford was another one.
Yeah, they did nothing with him. And then they finally just got rid of him, and then they brought him back, and he did nothing when they brought him back. So, yeah, they've kept so many of these guys that have not really amounted to anything. And it's not like Yash Nyman changed anyone's lives by sticking around for a couple of years. So, yeah, they just have to – they have to kind of figure out that these back-of-the-roster UDFA late-round draft pick types are – yeah, I get that they show some talent and some flash, but, man, they were taken there for a reason, and the odds that they become anything significant is pretty small.
Yep. But, hey, man, the undrafted streak. We love the undrafted streak.
Meanwhile,
don't look at who the undrafted guys are. Don't do that.
Meanwhile, special teams has cost you in the playoffs in 3 consecutive years in a row, and obviously longer than that, too, if you want to go back further. But, yeah. What could go wrong? All right. Any other thoughts on restricted free agency tenders, anything like that before we get to our next topic?
Nah, man. My only take is probably pull the trigger for Kennard. And that's been my only take the entire time. Let everyone else hit the market.
Likewise.
Figure out price points.
Let's talk NFLPA report card rankings. The first thing, the most obvious situation in the entire world, is that despite the NFL not wanting these released, that they would still 1,000,000,000% get released. And we have them for pretty much every team, I think, now that they're out there.
They had it on their website, right? So, like, what the issue was the NFL was like, the NFLPA cannot publish this for the public. But the NFLPA has their own website that they can share things among union members.
Yep.
And obviously... who ESPN's Kalen Kaler, I believe, was the one who got the full list, the one that I saw.
Sure.
So she obviously got access to it some way and published the whole thing. Yeah.
Which will continue to happen as long as they continue to do this. It will leak out every single
year. Well, hey, the NFL is really going to crack down and figure out who leaked this. By the way, the NFL said as soon as, like, the Gruden emails dropped, they were going to figure out who had them when Gruden and the NFL were the only people who had the access to that. And it's been at, like, 5 years. And no updates on that. They said they were going to find it immediately. By the way, they did that in post. And this is not to clear Gruden of what he said, right? the words that Gruden used to describe the union leader was dropped, like, it was either 24 or 48 hours before the NFLPA was going to vote out DeMaurice Smith. And it completely swung the votes. Roger Goodell is worth every dollar. Make no mistake about it. Roger Goodell is worth every dollar. But yeah, this is going to keep happening, folks. It's going to keep
very much so. But Packers did not do so great in said team rankings, including a big fall for Matt LaFleur, a letter C grade for Adam Stenovich. And, you know, they still are upset that there's no daycare for the Packers. So there's that. What were your key takeaways from this?
The most interesting things to me, right, is you kind of like the grades are the grades. Like there's some things where like a B plus can be the number one ranked in within that subgroup. Right. And or a B plus can be like 30th. Right. Yep. People are generally happy. Like their happiness is on a different scale from a category to category basis. Right. The childcare stuff, like just get it fixed. I don't know what the situation, you know better than me, Eddie, what the situation is for game days in Green Bay and how available childcare is on those Sundays.
It's not. I've not seen a place that has weekend childcare availability for like daycare centers or things like that in Green Bay. That doesn't mean there's not, but I have not seen them or not aware of them.
Just take care of it. Locker room drastically improved. Not surprised. We got a new locker room, right? And recently, the training staff stuff or the training room stuff, I'm less concerned about because we're about to invest a bunch. We have invested a bunch of money, yep, and we'll be changing the training room very soon. The training staff stuff kind of stinks, dude. Like that's not great that they don't really like, they don't like the strength and conditioning coaches and stuff. We ranked 28th in that. If you remember, we got our strength and conditioning. This was a new one, right? People complained about the old strength and conditioning staff. We got the new one from San Francisco.
They graded well. The old one graded really well in these same report cards, like one of the top graded groups. So go on.
We got our guy from San Francisco. San Francisco has been the most injured team in the NFL under Kyle Shanahan. And no, it's not because of what is even the thing? The electromagnetic, whatever.
Yeah, but the power converters or whatever that are right next to the stadium.
Which, like, the practice. So before it was the stadium, that was where their practice field was, like, since the 80s. They spent more time there in the 80s than they did than they do now. But basically, like, under Shanahan specifically, and it's part of because of the practices, and I think part of because of the plays. Like, I've talked to people in the league who, like, league office, right? Who work on like injury and prevention stuff. And those conversations mostly started about specialty stuff because of the dynamic kickoff and things like that. But like they asked me one time, because one of them follows me on Twitter, because I posted something about Shanahan and injuries and just kind of out of my butt. And I was like, yeah, I'm not surprised. And they asked me about those things and why. And it's because they run like these pin and pull run schemes and stuff like that. Like you're running full, like it's not, you know, slow runs like in the middle and you're patient and you're waiting for it's like, we're going to create an alley and we're going to hit it full speed. And I'm like, of course the backs die every year. And these linemen get hurt and you're getting banged up in practice when you're doing that, you know, full speed or even half speed. Right. Like, yeah, those are high impact. Those are maybe you're basically doing a kickoff return on those plays. Right.
And it's for everyone too. Imagine Trent Williams being the one coming at you on the other side.
Kyle Juszczyk going in motion and all that stuff. Like, I'm not surprised.
Kittle.
San Francisco has been the most injured team under Shanahan. They had 1 year, Andy, where they were like not horrendous from like a missed games perspective. And after that year, that's when we hired the training guy from Green Bay. I don't know how they operate in the training staff. That's not really my world. I can't speak to that. But
yeah, it's not
bringing
a
guy from San Francisco and then guy's still getting hurt and guy's not liking that guy. I'm like, geez, should have seen it coming.
Yeah. There's that. And then, of course, you've got the head coach and the offensive coordinator who also did not grade well either.
Yeah. The head coach I thought was interesting because they must have subsections in this type of stuff. because they were talking about Nagler had the screenshot of what they actually sent to the PA. Like when you click the team profile and they give you that information, which we had access to all of that for all of the teams. But at least Nagler was able to get it, and he got it before Taylor even put up the report card ranking. Shout out to him and Cheesehead TV. And it was like respect. Like, what the heck does that mean? The other interesting thing about this is the timing of the report card. Did you see the date?
It's before the 5-game losing streak, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So it was from November 2nd to December 11th. So that was before, and people are like, before the 5-game losing streak concluded? No, before it started. So the Packers over that period were either 5-2-1 to 9-3-1. And then after the report card was submitted, right?
Yeah.
That's when they went on the 5-game losing streak. So these numbers might be inflated, which is not a great sign. The offensive coordinator thing, I'm like, uh-oh. That's not good. Because who likes him? Is it just Matt?
it seems like it. Well, the thing with Steno, and people throw this back at me is, you know, so in our position, right, like we have to have something to back it up to say like, hey, like if we're going to say like, hey, Packers should move on from Adam Stenovich or whatever, it shouldn't just be like, it's a feel thing. Or like, you should say like, well, here's why. And I'm not saying that this stuff maybe doesn't exist, but for the longest time, I just said, it's really, really difficult to parse out of like, is there something that Steno is really doing wrong? It's Matt's offense, right? It's, you know, he's the one that's calling the plays. You know, I've seen people throw back, well, Steno's, you know, huge in the offensive line room and the offensive line really struggled. And sure, you know, we know he was involved in it, but yeah. Butkus is still the offensive line coach. And they didn't, as far as we know to this day, they have not moved on even from Butkus at this point, and he's the actual offensive line coach. So my whole point was just that, like, it's tough to put the argument together of, hey, here's why they should move on from Steno, or Steno sucks, or, you know, get rid of him or whatever. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying it's really tough to put that argument together. And then this comes out, and now the players are grading him as a C overall offensive coordinator. And that's probably not the greatest sign in the world for Adam Stenovich. And that's the first like real true evidence that you can point to and say, all right, that's concerning. And that should be something that raises some red flags.
Right. Cause you need if your head coach is going to be a play caller, which 3/4 of the league are doing that, only a quarter of the league is doing the CEO type of stuff. You have to have guys in those positions to be able to run meetings and do prep and all sorts of stuff. Right. And it should be a vibesman basically. And, you know, Steno's not great on the mic. Neither is Rich. People really like Rich. So I don't think you can go off of just he's good on the mic, so therefore people love him type of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is a decent data point into this. And it's not like we can track this stuff year to year, because they just started the coordinator stuff this past year. The coordinator tracking and home field tracking were new additions to the NFL PA report cards. Since we're on coaches, update on the wide receiver coach and whether he got a buyout from Penn State or not. I cannot get conclusive evidence. Yes. What I will say is, like, every single person I talked to in the circumstance, they were like, almost certainly you had to pay a buyout to get him. Penn State wasn't just going to let him walk for nothing and, you know, do a, hey, good for you. You know, you're getting an NFL opportunity. We're just going to be worse and shot for a wide receiver coach way after the portal, way after signing day, all this stuff. Like, that's not really how it works. So right. We almost certainly had to pay a buyout, which is the first one that I know of this year. Cause I don't think we bought out anyone else.
No, that would be again, telling that they really wanted him, which is a good sign. Mm-hmm. I think he has the opportunity to be of all the coaches. I think he has the opportunity to be maybe the biggest upgrade over Mahaffey. Again, tough to say on the outside, but I think there is an opportunity that could be a real add to the staff.
The linebacker coach too, Virginia Tech had a really good linebacker who ended up transferring to Alabama and was a big portal guy, like top, I think 20, like portal guy. So, you know, his defense wasn't great at Virginia Tech. He ended up getting canned with the rest of the staff. The head coach actually at Virginia Tech became the defensive coordinator, as weird as that is, because he previously had worked for James Franklin, who ended up becoming the head coach. So that was a weird situation. But yeah, I think those are probably two biggest areas of improvement. By the way, we got, since we were talking about San Francisco and getting that strength and conditioning coordinator from there, we got Stenovich from San Francisco. And now our new DBs coach is coming from San Francisco. So if this DB coach flops, I'm banning Matt from hiring guys who work for Kyle. I'm done.
The offense got worse once Robert Saleh got it there as an assistant to Matt.
I mean,
I don't really put it
in. I don't know how much
work guys are actually doing. Yeah.
Collecting insurance and just doing some film breakdowns and stuff.
Very much so. Very much, not real. But it has not gone great so far when they've taken things from San Fran. Aaron Banks, also from San Fran. Trying to think if there's any other.
Dude, we're banning it. We can't no more. Matt, stop hiring your friends' guys.
Now I have to check.
Did you see who else we interviewed for the special teams coordinator job, by the way?
Just really quick, I need to see this. All right, so no Juwan Jennings, Kendrick Bourne, Sky Moore, Yetur Gross-Matos, Jordan Elliott, Kevin Givens, Cleland Farrell. There's not much. Thankfully, there's not much in free agency for the San Francisco 49ers, so we should be mostly safe from making any big 49ers mistakes in free agency. But no, who else did they interview? They did the Titans guy eventually, right? Or the not the Titans guy, Fitzpatrick Seahawks guy.
Yes. So yeah. we got him. Huber reported that Colt Anderson, who was the guy in San Francisco special teams, who
the guy the said year, they can't get.
Yeah, the year prior, so not this past year, but the year prior, served his lone year as special teams coordinator and finished 32nd in the league. He advanced to his second interview. And then we also brought in Chase Blackburn from LA. He was the special teams coordinator McVay fired midseason. And he advanced to a second interview too. So, yeah. These were some. I mean, I think we kind of misplaced it a little bit because I looked at the former special teams guy in Atlanta, right? And then I finally looked into his numbers, and I'm like, oh, he's been bad like every year.
Yeah.
But yeah, Matt tapping his friends on the shoulder and being like, "Yo, who's ready? Who's ready? I need a name soon." The tampering period is going to start. At the end of this week?
It's early next week or end of this week. It's right around there. So I think you can make a very strong argument for the people that are anti-Matt. Matt's biggest Achilles heel so far has been hiring assistants.
Loyalty and hiring guys from his friends or hiring his friends. Yes.
Yeah.
He's not beating the nepotism or I guess not nepotism. I mean, they're not related to him, allegations.
So, I mean, special teams coordinator, again, we can make the argument that inherently the organization has failed, but they have not figured out and settled on a special teams coordinator in his tenure. Is he on his fourth guy now, right? Fourth special
teams? I believe so. Yeah, because it was Menenga Drayton and then Rich, and now he's on Acord. Yeah.
So, he's on the fourth special teams coordinator. I don't think he had a choice on Pettine from the sort of sounds of it.
No.
So that's not his choice, not his fault. And then
I'll give him credit for Halfley.
Halfley was good.
He swung on Barry and missed.
We'll see what happens. Yeah, Barry was a huge miss. Halfley was a hit, and we'll see what happens with Gannon. And then, by the way, like Barry, the final three were Jim Leonard.
And Evero, right?
Evero and Barry. And it sounds like they wanted Leonard. We still have not gotten – there's been refuted reports or whatever. But either way – to have those three as your final and settle on Joe Barry of the three is a really brutal look. Evero has been a really good defensive coordinator for the most part in his time so far. And then on the offensive coordinator side, mileage again may vary on Nathaniel Hackett and how, but I mean, the offense was good when he was here. I don't know how much he
actually had to do with that. Weisman, you're running meetings. Keep the guys up.
And he had good vibes, and he, I guess, continues to have good vibes, but, yeah, and then Steno from there. It has not been a great group of coordinators, to say the least.
Not great.
Not great at all. All right, multiple other things, but ones that are probably a little bit more lightning roundish. We do know now that Green Bay will not have a home game taken away for an international game, which is huge. They could still have a road game against Detroit or who's the other one? Is it Atlanta? There's one other. This is the Paris team. Forgetting who it is.
Saints.
Okay. Yeah. So Saints or Lions are the two teams that they theoretically still could be playing in an international game on the road. All the other teams that are playing international, Green Bay does not have on their schedule. So there's at least a chance that they avoid this altogether. And if so, it's taking a road game away. They already have 9 home games, which is nice. And then they could take a road game and turn it into, at worst, a neutral site game.
Yeah, and this is kind of interesting because the Packers are kind of due, right? Yep. And usually, because of the odd number scheduling, right? This year, it would have been more likely that they played a home team, right? Because it makes more sense for you to lose a home game when you have 9 home games.
Yep.
And if you, a year where you have 8, the Packers are due. The only team that's played fewer international games is the NFL's cash cow, the Dallas Cowboys, right? So I kind of thought we had a decent chance. I got let know this would have been a week ago, yeah, because they announced it during the combine that Jacksonville, this was the day before it came out, Jacksonville was going to get the 2 London games. And then I was told that they were leaning the Bears for the Spain game by the same guy. And then they announced the Jacksonville stuff because all the international games got announced in a pretty short period, right? Other than like the Australia one that had been announced way before. And then we heard nothing for a week, and then it ended up being the Falcons and not the Bears. So I don't know if something went weird with like the scheduling of that or something, but
could be.
Or I was given bad info, but they nailed the Jacksonville one.
Yeah, either way, I mean, it obviously could come back to haunt a little bit if one of their home games is taken away next year when they only have 8 home games.
7, and then one of them's on a Monday and one of them's on a Thursday. And
Yeah, that could come back to haunt them a little bit. But for now, I don't know, maybe it sounds like there are some rumored teams already to play the Lions and the Saints. But
I'm trying that.
Yeah, the other thing too is that it was rumored last year Green Bay and Pittsburgh were going to play internationally, and then that never ended up happening. So, well, we'll see what comes to pass. But if it were the Lions as a road game, I wouldn't hate it. If like it was a Week 8 Lions Packers game that was supposed to be played in Detroit that's now international, and you get the bye week after that, I could live with that.
Yeah, I mean, we're just going to be dealing with this every year, right? The league has come out and said like we want every team to play 1 international game every year. Period. Right. Yep. We heard it from Kraft first, and then we heard it from Goodell. So they're kind of making their demands, and I think they're going to get it, Andy, because I don't know if you saw the thing from like the Wall Street sources stuff that Arian, I believe it's Arian, reported.
Okay.
And he was like, the NFL wants to renegotiate their contracts right now, midway through the deal.
I'm sure they would.
And Goodell thinks he can get it. And what they want is double. And I'm like, how do you even, you have 5 years left on the deal and you're like, hey, you're going to pay me double now. And I don't even know what the threat you can put against them to get to that goal is, unless it's,
we're not going to negotiate with you next time.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. That's the only way you can get there is, hey, renegotiate with us right now, because you just gave the NBA more money for Sunday night basketball than we get from Sunday night football. And that's not right. To NBC, obviously. Yep. And if you don't negotiate with us right now, we'll be full streaming on our next broadcast contract, right? So I don't know if they can execute that, if someone calls someone's bluff, what happens with the economy between now and by the time they can get to the table and negotiate these things. Side note, the Dolphins just sold 1% at a $12.5 billion valuation. The line is just going up like crazy, and the NFL legitimately does not believe it stopped. They're not acting as if this thing is going to stop anytime soon. So
if
the players get told, like, hey, we need labor peace on a CBA, and you're not just getting the 2 extra games or the extra game and the game, the bye week, right, in terms of the money, but we're doubling your salary over the lifetime of the next CBA because we just got double the money from NBC, CBS, Fox, ESPN, Amazon, YouTube. I think they take that deal.
Yeah.
And I think we're playing internationally every single year. And if you're doubling the price, I think guys start signing up real quick.
Well, if they do keep it at 17 games, you have that new game. Well,
they want to keep it up to 8. They want to go up to 18.
Right, for sure.
But they want to go to 18 over 20 weeks is what they want to do.
Double bye.
And then you end up having, what is it, President's Day, the day after the Super Bowl. That's their plan. And the preseason is only 2 weeks. And I don't know what the hell this means for training camp, because training camp overlaps with preseason.
We'll be right back. I don't either. But if for some reason it does stay at 17 games, which I expect it to go 18 as well, but if for some reason it does stay at 17, it is very logical that you just take that new 17th game, which is an AFC-NFC game. You wouldn't even have to do it that one, but whatever it is, just take every team and play a neutral site game so that you still have 8 home, 8 away, and then a neutral site as your, you know, an international game for everybody. It would just make logical sense to do it that way. So it's just baked into the schedule.
But then you have teams like Jacksonville that are going to play like twice on the road and kind of like, or try twice internationally a year.
Yeah.
And it's messed stuff up. I don't know. It's weird.
You could still have them do more. Like you could still say hey, if you want to give up one of your home games to do London and another one, that's fine. You can do that. But here's the mandated, you know, 16 games, and everyone's going to get eight home, 8 away, and 1 neutral. Like you could easily do it that way. But I expect it to go 18 game season anyway. So it's probably a moot point.
Yeah, it's happening. If they can double the cap, because the cap is based off of rev share, and that is mostly broadcasting deals. If they can double the cap, the players are going to sign up for the 18th game, period. It's happening.
And to give them a double bye. The double bye makes all this. I mean, the fact that they don't have the double bye already is insane, because it literally is good for everybody. You get an extra week of programming and the players, and then you can say player safety and the players get an extra week off. Like, and you can now do, like, it's very easy. If you have an international game, you can always have a bye. Even if you have a week 3 international game, you can have a bye after it, because you still have another one coming up down the road later on anyway. So you can always have a bye after that international game if you want it. There's just so many different ways that it makes all the sense in the world. I don't know how that's not a thing already.
Yeah. I'm assuming. I work under the understanding that it's happening, folks.
Yeah.
At some point. Who knows when, but.
I have done the complete 180 on it when, like, there was the talk of, like, hey, we're going to go from 16 to 17 games. We're going to cut a preseason and add a regular season. And people were complaining. I'm like, what are you talking about? This is more regular season football. Why would you not want more regular season football? And I think I've actually now gone, after getting 17 games, I think I've actually gone in a different direction of, like, I think 16 was perfect, but I'm not going to fight it. It is what it is, and it's going to happen. Probably.
That's where I am. I'm the Goot answer, where it's like, hey, man, the time for complaining was 5 years ago. We're past that point. It's just going to be happening to us. So you better get good at winning these international games.
All right, a couple others. Actually, more than that, we'll, again, try to go through these lightning rounds. Sounds like Goody had some hints at a 3-4, which, again, Nagler inside was linebacker. There too. Yeah, inside linebacker was the big potential tell.
Yeah, I mean, he said inside linebacker. That is a 3-4 term. Usually, if you're referring to that guy in a 4-3, you're calling that guy a Mike, or you're calling that guy a middle linebacker. I mean, technically, I guess, like, your Will, who's an outside linebacker in 3-4, would be an inside linebacker in a 4-3, would be an inside linebacker in a 3-4. So yeah, I think this is the thing that we said was coming, right? All indication is that teams that play this scheme really want to base out of a 3-4. The only guy who really didn't was Gannon that first time around in Philadelphia, and his personnel probably had something to do with that. But as soon as Fangio came in, he was like, screw that, we're going to be a 3-4. What that means for the ends, I don't think that's going to be those guys standing up, or not standing up, but lining up over the tackle. They're going to basically use 2-3 techniques. That's what happens in the NFL for the most part. So no, LVN is not kicking in to get double teamed by both a guard and a tackle. That is not the world that we live in right now. They're probably going to have fewer numbers at inside linebacker, which I think could potentially expose Neiman to not being re-signed or something like that. Which, again, I don't know how big of a deal that is. I think it was interesting that in the context of that, he was saying we need to add competition to the inside linebacker room. And I'm like, oh, Quay's gone for sure then. like you might only have room for 4 guys, and you already have McDuffie, Hopper, and Cooper under contract. Yep. So if you're talking about adding competition, that means Quay's gone. Yeah, we're going to be run first on the defensive on the line of scrimmage. Like the outside linebacker is going to be run first too. So at least on early downs, passing downs, you can do whatever you want, have your sub packages, all that stuff. So yeah, I think we're getting what we thought we were getting, which I know, right? Like defensive coordinators get the pat on the back and their bellies rubbed and all that stuff every single time they have the opening press conference, which by the way, we still haven't had for Gannon.
It's crazy.
When they say, hey, we're going to be aggressive, we're going to be fast, we're going to be versatile, and everyone goes, yay! But every single one of them say that, including the ones who aren't very versatile or anything.
Yeah.
And I do think Gannon is versatile. Like, he plays a bunch of different packages and stuff. He's in the sim pressure world where you're still only rushing four, but you're rushing four from different angles, and you're dropping guys from different angles. But I think ultimately he does that to protect the quarter structure. And the team that they want to be ideally is going to be split high safeties, corners off coverage, line of scrimmage is going to be playing run first, and that allows everyone else on the field to work pass first. So it's going to be basically off the line of scrimmage is going to be coverage first, on the line of scrimmage is going to be run first. And then you dabble into pass rushing first world when you get into the sub packages and stuff.
Yep. No, that all makes sense. And that's, again, based on hearing inside linebacker. And again, I know Nagler said that Goody said something too about, you know, playing more 3-4 base fronts than they have in the past. It seems like the writing's definitely on the wall at this point in time. What did you think of the Rashawn Gary comments and anything else from Goody's presser?
Oh, I think he's lying about Gary. I mean, I had to think about what it feels like forever ago.
Yep.
You have to cut him. He's making like a top 20 cap hit among non-quarterbacks in the NFL this year. And he was no good last year. He lucked into a bunch of sacks that he happened to be the guy who was playing opposite of Micah Parsons when everyone was petrified of Micah Parsons, including the quarterbacks who ran away from Micah Parsons directly into Rashawn Gary. So no, I think he's gone. And the Packers can't do that. Like Goode said, like everyone is coming back. Basically the Packers aren't in a cap situation where that is even a reality. Like they would have to basically burn the 2028 season completely to the ground to just keep Gary and Jenkins, and like they're above the cap right now. And that's before any potential re-signings, anyone in free agency, the rookies. It's not happening, man. I don't buy it. I thought it was interesting that people said that like there's been sourcing on Elton Jenkins might have a trade market. Like if you can find someone to take on Elton Jenkins for $20 million this year and you get to kind of move off scot-free, create that cap space and get a pick, go for it, especially after an injury. Like, that's crazy. But the Gary thing, I think you have to dump him. I don't think there's going to be another alternative.
This feels like Packers PR of like, yeah, Rashawn's really good. Somebody come and trade for him. Like,
Dreyer's great. Dreyer's going to be on this
team. Dreyer's amazing. Yeah. Somebody give us a draft pick for him. Yeah. Nobody wants it. All right. I guess we'll cut him. Like, hey, you know, Rashawn's really, really good. Like, he was super productive for us and, you know, everything. You know, somebody come give us a pick and then it won't happen. And yeah, I do think the Elton thing's interesting. This is where we get back to your conversation of, you know, Howie Roseman style of, all right. So, let me ask you this. What does Elton go for in free agency, do you think?
He'll probably get paid like a guard.
Yeah.
Right. I think he'll get looked at as a guard. I was going to say the center market is so weird, but he'll probably get paid like a guard. I mean, he'll get like 12.
So that was my number. That was my exact number.
12, 13, right?
So if it gets to the 14 range, if Green Bay eats $6 million in dead cap, is there then trade value? But do you want to eat $6 million in cap for
a 1-year contract? I think it's different than the Hobbs thing.
I agree.
It's only a 1-year deal.
I agree.
I don't think so. And like you could trade him to a team and they could shred up the contract and all that stuff. We'll see what happens. I'm really interested in the Kenny deal because like they said that they're going to restructure that thing. And I'm like, are you just going to pay him the $20 million and just spread it over 5 years and pay it in 27 instead of this year? Like if I'm Kenny, I don't renegotiate that deal.
No,
I stand on it and cut me and let me test the market. And then I'll come back to you with a number.
Dallas is in their own world. You can't, anything that they do is their own bizarro thing.
They got three defensive tackles. They all cost a ton of money and they want to restructure two of their deals. And I'm like, what do you mean you're going to restructure Quinn and Williams? You just traded a first round or a second round pick for them. What are we doing?
Yeah. They gave up more than that, right? Was Quinnen? Or no, maybe it was just, I don't know. Well, I forget.
They have the two ones this year still. So I assume.
They gave up that next year's one, I think. They gave up a two this year and a one next year, didn't they? Wasn't the Quinnen?
Yes, that is exact. And Mozzie Smith. Goodness gracious, dude.
Yeah, they're, like I said, they're in bizarro land. That you have to just let them be in bizarro land because you don't know what they're going to do next.
They're so, dude, they have to tender. Dude, they're so happy right now. They have a contract conflict with a kicker that they can get PR out of. And now Pickens is on the franchise tag too. So they can drag that thing out and get a bunch of PR for that one too.
Fun times. All right. Drew Dahlman retiring for the Bears. Tyler Biadasz released by Washington, visiting Chicago already. That's interesting. But Dahlman's just a massive, massive loss for Chicago.
Yeah, he was a Pro Bowler last year. Yeah. Stanford kid. Pull this up while I'm talking about this. Look up his contract. I don't know if this is something that's been coming for a while. So when a guy retires, you can go after a signing bonus.
Yep.
This was, if you want to get real dark here, right? The reason Aaron Hernandez isn't still with us right now is because he was they basically, like, the Patriots would have gotten that money back. And he was like, I'd rather give that to my family. Okay. So that doesn't always happen, right? Like Andrew Luck, the Colts didn't go after a signing bonus. I know that because I worked for his dad.
Yep.
In the XFL during that whole deal, which was crazy. Dahlman's money is completely flat year by year.
It is.
You have the prorated signing bonus, and it was a small signing bonus.
Two mil per year. So 6 mil total, yeah. 2 mil per year. He got
6 million up front, and it was two per year. His salary didn't move, which, like, Packers fans, you should recognize that as odd because the Packers backload everything, right?
Over 11 mil per year.
So I wonder if this is something like Dahlman's kind of thought about. And he was like, hey, man, let's take this year by year. I'll get the big money in the salary this year, and then we'll play it by year. And he made a call before a week before free agency. So hopefully everything is good with him,
right,
family-wise and stuff like that, and health-wise and all that. But, yeah, Chicago's in the center market. I'm going to mess up this guy's name.
Biadasz.
Okay. He's been pretty much like an average center, slightly above average center over his whole NFL career. Dealt with an injury at the end that got him put on IR. The Commanders weren't going into the playoffs. I don't think the injury is a big deal. He got put on IR like in week 17, didn't need a surgery for it or anything. I think if that injury happens in like week 4, he's not on injured reserve, right? It's just like an end of season weird roster mechanic thing. Let's get someone in because you're not going to be available for the last 2 weeks of the season or whatever.
Yep. You can poach somebody from a practice squad, which is basically like getting another 90-man guy. There's a lot of different
right things. Right. There's so many things. So I wouldn't take the injury thing as a major concern. They lined up the first visit with him. That's interesting. He would probably be one of the top centers on the market. I think he's probably over Cade Mays.
That's probably the conversation, right? You probably have, you have Linderbaum first, and then you've got McGovern from the Bills, who I think is probably second. And then
I think
Mays and Biadasz are probably, choose your flavor.
Right, exactly. And then Mays is like kind of the one guy who sort of split the McGovern and Sean Ryan tier, right? So we got another guy who's in over Sean Ryan, which should be good, right? But then you get the minus one starter because the Bears got retired. So now we're kind of back to square zero. Biadasz is able to visit teams right now because he is not he's a street free agent, right? He's not a qualifying free agent. So qualifying free agent, guys who had their contracts expire. Biadasz was released for cap space purposes in Washington, which is weird because Washington's in like top five in cap space. I don't know what the heck that they're planning.
A lot of weird offensive line moves already this offseason.
Yeah, like the Cleveland thing is weird because, like, dude, have you seen the Cleveland offensive line? Every single starter is set to hit free agency.
It's DeJuan Jones, Luke Whippler, and now Titus Howard, who they got for a fifth round pick. That's it. That's all that they've got.
Dude, they're going to be a mess for a while. And they're talking about, like, I talked to a guy who's down there at the combine, and he was saying, like, yeah, he thinks it's going to be Deshaun this year. And I'm like, oh my God, dude. The sunk cost fallacy is just through the roof there. Like, you're going to It's a mess.
The Jets and Browns are not going to be real franchises for a little bit.
You wonder why it was so hard to fill that job in Cleveland, right?
Yeah. The Kevin Stefanski might be the biggest winner of the offseason. I mean, Atlanta's got its own issues too, but just getting out of there and then
the
still
Browns are the biggest loser, right? You lose Stefanski and Jim Schwartz.
Yeah. Schwartz isn't anywhere yet, is he? He's still Cleveland, I guess, still owns his rights.
Yeah, they still hold his rights, so I think he's just sitting out a year, and then once they fill position, he'll be like, oh, I'm unretired. So you either pay me or have to move off of me. Because you can't trade picks for coordinators.
Yeah.
It's an NFL rule. I did not know that.
Sounds like a stupid rule. We've got some Vikings stuff. Kyler Murray is out in Arizona. He's released. Yeah. Maybe some Vikings interest. And then Aaron Should Jones.
Be through the roof because they don't have a lot of cap space. And Kyler is going to sign on league minimum deal. Minimum. So the way that this works, right, I think Kyler was going to make, I think it was something close to like 30-something million dollars. I think it was like 38 or something like that. 38,
I think was the number, yep.
Yeah, so that's fully guaranteed. The Cardinals are going to pay him that to not play football for them. There's been no indication that they're going to post June 1 him. Even post June 1 him doesn't really help that much because, again, most of it is that salary, right? I mean, I guess you can convert. You could, I guess, theoretically, you could convert that before you release him and then spread it out and pay it in 27. But all that means is your rebuild really doesn't get to zero until 28.
Right.
Michael Floor might be fired by 2028 the way things are going in Arizona. Unless someone can beat the dollar value that Kyler is getting from Arizona,
which they
will have no change in the money coming in. It will just be offset and helping the Arizona Cardinals. So he is incentivized right now to take a league minimum deal. Minnesota has a head coach that people want to work for if you're a quarterback, and they don't have very much cap space. So mentally, I'm like, they're the leader, if not the only option, right?
Yep.
If you present me the options of I get to throw to Justin Jefferson and my head coach and play caller is Kevin O'Connell, or you could sign with the Jets, or you could sign with the Browns.
There was reports today that there's two teams he's interested in. Minnesota's obviously one.
Okay.
I don't know what the other would be. Atlanta, maybe with
Arizona.
Atlanta would be the only one.
Atlanta, maybe. Yeah, actually, that kind of makes sense. I'm surprised they're so off of Penix already. But
and he's injured too, right? Like he had an injury was a little bit.
He always gets injured, man.
Yeah.
There's that photo of him in the wheelchair because he had the double knee surgery and stuff.
Like, yeah,
he's always been an issue.
So that'd be the other one. If you want a little insurance there, that could potentially make some sense.
I'll buy the insurance on the Kyler's going to Minnesota take.
Yeah, that would be the other one. But Aaron Jones released Jonathan Grenard on the trade block, which is very interesting. So some stuff
happening in Minnesota. I don't know if they're going to get a biter on the Grenard thing. We'll see.
I think they will. It just depends on if it's lucrative enough for Minnesota to actually do it. Grenard's been good for them.
He's been good. He's expensive, though.
Actually, I don't think it's – I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I thought it wasn't that bad. Give me one second. I'll pull it up. So team acquiring him, he's 29 years old. It would be $18.39 million base per game roster bonus, so about $19
million. I guess, yeah, it's expensive for Minnesota, right?
Yeah.
It's more expensive for Minnesota than the team taking him on.
Yeah, 1 year. I mean, it's basically a 1 year, $19 million, and then you'd have a team option next year of 1 year. So it's 2 years, $38-19 million per year. It's not that bad for the team acquiring them. Yeah. I bet they get biter. It sounds like Minnesota wants a day two. If I were a team that needed an edge, like a third round pick for Grenard doesn't seem like that bad of a deal the way he's been playing, but I don't know. We'll see.
He's expensive, man. So
yeah,
34th. Among defenders. So for the average, well, I guess not the average NFL team, but the average NFL team has one defender with a cap hit as large as Grenard's is this year. So, and it's not like he's an all pro, like he's a good player.
Yeah.
He's making a lot of money and he's toward the end of his contract. So
fair points. And then David Montgomery got traded. I thought that was a good deal for Detroit overall, getting a fourth, a player, and a seventh. I don't know what Houston's doing with that thought process there.
They completely revamped their offensive line room because they hated the culture that was there in 24. And it was part of the reason why they were willing to part away with Tunsil, who's still a good offensive tackle because of that. They were like, we are pressure washing this place. Our culture is so bad on the offensive line. Everyone's head is getting chopped off, whether you're a player, you're an assistant, or you're the offensive coordinator. They rebuilt it in 2025 and have now shipped away two of those guys. I don't know why they want to play this game of musical chairs. There's not, again, we talked about this kind of a little bit earlier. There's like seven real offensive tackles in this draft. And I think probably all of them are, I don't know if Ian Nachor and Blake Miller are for sure going to be first round picks, but they're definitely going to be options there. I don't know how many swings you're going to get at these guys for starters in 2026. Like, that's going to be a major issue. And we've talked about this whole time, right? Like, the whole free agency period and leading up to it. Rashid Walker is the only full-time starter coming off a second contract who's available in free agency. He's it. Yep. Everyone else was either a part-time starter or is on the older side. So if you're trying to lock down the position, stripping away an interior offensive lineman and Titus Howard, a former first-round pick tackle, I don't know, man.
I'll be willing to bet just about anything. Whatever team gives Rashid Walker that salary to will not end up happy at the end of that deal. I get that's what you have to pay for the going rate of the top tackle in the free agency, that you can't get those guys and find those guys. I still don't think the team that gets them is going to be too thrilled with that at the end of the day, giving them that much money.
The big problem is, right, if he gets 25 and the first cap hit is like 11 and it starts going from there on the four-year deal,
good luck.
That means 4 years from now, his cap hit is like 40. 30,
yeah, 30.
Yeah, like, say, yeah. And you have to take on dead cap to release that, right?
It's going
to
be ugly.
One of the teams, and I don't even know if I have, they have the cap space, but one of the teams I heard was interesting was Cleveland, which I'm like, dog.
Well, I'm sure they are. They don't have an offensive line.
The league should take over the Cleveland Browns. This is absurd. Like, it's getting bad. I learned that Ty Simpson, who I think is like a third round talent, he's close family friends with Todd Monken. And I'm like, oh my God, if you go to Cleveland behind a dismantled offensive line and you have the Shadur drama and the Watson drama backing you up, like, you're going to get eaten alive, man.
It's going to be a nightmare.
You shouldn't, like, for his own safety, he should not be put in that position.
If Todd Monken goes like 6-11 next year, he should be in the coach of the year conversation. I'm putting the line in the sand right now. The NFL needs to go full David Stern when they vetoed the Chris Paul, vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers. They're just like, no, you can't do that. And the NFL needs to take over and just start setting rules for what the Browns can and can't do. Cause they can't manage themselves. They're a nightmare. Last couple things, Anthony Richardson, Jimmy Garoppolo, some quarterback buzz that Green Bay might be interested in both. I don't see either of those happening, but we'll see. We'll be right back.
So Richardson, I think he makes more sense for a guy. Like, he makes more sense for like the Rams, right? A team that like you're going to need a starter of the future.
Yep.
Within the next year or so, right? Garoppolo, I'm like, so the way the market is right now, right? A backup quarterback probably runs you like $5 million.
At least.
Are we going to offset like a fifth round pick to sign Jimmy Garoppolo? I really don't think so.
Nope.
Especially if we're not spending, because if we're spending on the backup quarterback and we're not spending on a nose tackle and we're not spending on a center and we're not spending on a corner and we're not spending on what else do we need?
Everything. Not everything.
Yeah. Everything. Cause those would all offset draft picks too.
Unless they're cut players.
I don't believe the reporter. I think it was Fowler mentioned it.
Fowler was the one for Garoppolo. Yep.
Yeah. I don't think he's lying. Right. But
the only thing I could think of though, is apparently Arizona has legitimate Garoppolo interest. Was there a rumor that LaFleur had a lot of interest in Garoppolo and he ran with it as Green Bay and just got the wires crossed? That's the only other thing I can think of,
I guess. I just would be really surprised if they invested in a backup quarterback with the way that the cap is set up right now, the way the scheduling is, the way that money or that comp picks would have to be offset and stuff. I'd be a little surprised.
It's why I've made the pitch, even though I wasn't a fan coming out. I'm not a fan now, but Will Levis as like a backup, because he probably cost you like a seventh at worst to get him.
And I believe his contract told.
It's right? 2 million. Yeah. Well, I don't know if it told, but it's like 2 million. If it told, then he has 2 years left. That would be interesting.
That's what I mean. I think his contract told because they drafted Cam Ward. And then he was like, yes, I'm going to have the surgery. Put me on IR right now.
Interesting.
Like, they didn't even make it to camp or anything. So if he has 2 years left, it certainly, I mean, we traded Malik when he had multiple years left. We didn't trade when he had 1 year left, right? You want to get, as Goody said, right? He's not spending money and draft picks to solve 1 year problems. He wants multi-year solution. So,
yep. And then Marshawn Lattimore released. I can't imagine Green Bay is in the Marshawn Lattimore business. So I would say no on that, but the corner available.
His metrics were still good, but he tore his ACL. So like he's on the same, and it's basically like the same timeline as like Micah, right? So I don't know what you do with him. I think if you're Lattimore, I mean, you're probably going to have to sign for the minimum this year anyway, but like I would probably wait, rehab on my own. And then come like early October, start taking visits with teams and see what opportunity you can get and stuff. Cause I think if you're Lattimore, you're thinking about the 27 free agency cycle more than 26, honestly. Cause if he can show that he's bounced back, I mean, he'll still get some money. Washington created, I think it was something like $18 million in cap space by releasing him. So that was always going to happen.
Yeah, no, for sure. And again, I don't see Green Bay being in that market. We didn't even talk NFL Combine, which is crazy. We talked about every other topic, but didn't really talk about it.
No one runs anymore, Andy. I'm sad. I got from a guy who works in the league, right? Not a team. A guy who works like league office stuff. Because my article went around like agents and stuff like that about the participation stuff. They wanted the data. I talked with a bunch of guys. The guy from the league told me that they're going to start using force play stuff. Which is interesting because there's been some teams who have collected that data already. Like Atlanta's had this for a long time. I remember it being a big deal when they took like Tackerist McKinley, right? And stuff started buzzing in the league and they're like, oh, he's got this crazy force plate number. And I'm like, what the hell is a force plate number? So I think they're eventually just going to move on from the drills. I mean, they might do the 40 and they might do the vertical jump because they're television events kind of. But I think like the agilities and stuff, I think they're just going to get rid of them and they're going to use these force plate stuff where it's basically like, I don't know, not the size of a room, but the size of half of a room. And you're asking a guy to like move around and cut and all this stuff on it. And they're just going to collect that data, but it's going to be in a black box. I mean, I don't think that they're going to release it to fans or anything. I mean, it's the same thing that people say about like, oh, the teams don't need these drills because they have the GPS numbers and all this stuff. And kind of for now, at least, like, do you think teams who are G5 football teams are happy that P5 teams are getting those data on those players and are going after them in the portal? Like, eventually those teams are going to say, like, no, we don't want eyes on our guys.
Yeah.
We don't want you to track us. The other thing, too, is, like, I've had access to some of these metrics, and I can't make up or down of them. Like, top speed – I get, but it's not as clean and a 1-to-1 ratio and like context, you know, context matters. Like that's why you run the 40-yard dash. Cause you don't really get straight line 40 yards a lot in actual games. Right. I've seen average speed. I don't know if average speed matters at all. And then like people like the NFL puts out the stuff where it's like, oh, top speed in the gauntlet drill. And I'm like, we're doing this based off the discretion of how slow guys decide to move through. Like, do you understand what I mean? Where I'm like, we're not doing apples to apples stuff. Like it's a lot of numbers that need a lot more context and we're taking away all of that context when we look at them.
The smart teams will find ways to use good numbers to help their evaluation. There's a lot of ugly, bad.
I just haven't seen numbers. This is what I'll say. The numbers that are presented on some of these services, whether it's like PFF Ultimate or some of these other things that I've had access to over the years, they don't really make sense. Like the top speeds don't match the 40-yard dash, for example.
And right? What I will say is if there's a player, I don't even know a good comp, but if there's a player that runs like a 4.640, but you get their actual GPS data and their top speeds are consistently amongst the highest amongst, you know, their peers or whatever, I will screw the 40 yard dash time. I care a lot more about play speed than I do about, you know, what he ran, you know, for the 40 or whatever. But yeah, if it's legitimately like you're watching him on tape and you're like, all right, this guy doesn't look fast. He just did a 4.6. And now you're like, but his GPS says he's running super fast. Like, I don't know. I would want some other, I guess, level of confirmation at that point.
But again, this is more context, right? Yes. You're arguing for more context. And what we're having happen is stripping away context. Like DBs, like the three cone used to be very important because it would be, if you're a safety, you're a middle of the field guy, it kind of measures like how your ability to like baseball turn, right? In the middle of the field. If you're a corner, it's how you flip your hips running down the sideline. There's 9% of guys who tested the three cone among DBs this year. And these numbers are getting lower and lower year after year post COVID. It can't get much further down than 9%, Andy.
No,
it can't. And the NFL can't shorten the combine. Cause there's way too much in terms of like the medicals and the interviews. Like there's no way you can if you took away a day from the combine, it would be a mess. It would be a mess and everyone would hate it. But I also don't think the NFL has a 21-hour television product over 4 days anymore, the way that they used to. There's a lot less. I mean, the defensive tackles ran first at the NFL combine this year. And like the guys in the booth, like Jeremiah and Eisen were joking. We're like, well, that went fast. how are we gonna fill this time, dude? Like that went so quick. Like it was over.
And it's near impossible unless it's somebody like, because I like Jeremiah does legit like NFL work during the season. Unless you're like a Brugler or a Kuiper or McShay or one of those guys that are doing draft like all year, like that's all you're doing. Mm-hmm. It's really difficult to all of a sudden just like turn the draft switch and like know all of these guys enough. I mean, it's hard enough by draft time to know all of those guys well enough to speak educatedly about them, which is why we get orangutans making draft picks and everything else on day three. It's just a difficult thing to do. So to do it by combine time it's not easy. Credit to those guys.
There's a reason we don't turn in draft picks in February
when the combine runs. Because we could.
The NFL teams aren't ready.
Yep.
NFL teams are not ready. Like I spent a good amount of time watching prospects. I know three positions in and out. That's it. I know nose tackle. I know the offensive line is multiple positions, and I know corner. That's it. Like you can ask me about linebacker. No clue. No clue for the most part. I mean, you see guys in passing, but like, I don't know what the Cincinnati guy looks like. I haven't seen him. Yep. I haven't seen him.
It's my toughest thing that I do, which is why I usually bring Ross Uglum on for the daily draft every year to start going. And I think he's going to be coming on here in the next couple of weeks or so, but is to go one by one through these, because I've talked to you about this. I want to go deep diving as many of these guys as I can. And it's just a battle and a struggle because I don't want to half-ass it. I don't want to just be like, you know, a cursory glance at a player. I want to be able to speak educatedly about them, and getting to 100, 200, whatever guys it ends up being is just it's a freaking grind, but it's a grind I love. And it's a grind that I'm going to be doing a lot more of here in the very near future.
Yeah. It helps, you know, kind of looking at the top 40 is irrelevant right now. I will say that.
Yes, very much so. Justice, I've kept you way too long already. Thank you for catching me up on everything that I missed over the course of the last week. And of course, we're just going over all these topics, which are super interesting. I'm going to be again going through some of the NFLPA grades and Cam Acord as well over the course of the next couple of days, so people can look forward to that. What do you got cooking on Acme Packing Company?
I mean, we're covering free agency. We're doing all that stuff. I have the top 200 consensus board update for the free agents. So that is with cap casualties now and post tags and, you know, guys signing deals. I take them off the board too. So you can look at basically what is the live consensus ranking. Again, I started doing that this year because every free agency ranking has like a couple of like just weird hot takes that I'm like, all right, well, this doesn't look like what the rest of the rankings look like. So I made basically an aggregate of them, and I have 28 boards that I'm running now.
Did you see Matt Bowen's top 100 today?
He had Quay at 10, right? Is that the one you're talking about?
Rashid at 5, Quay at 10, Malik at 14, Romeo at 19. And the
yum, yum, yum. I'm so full of comp picks.
Yeah. I know. And Enigbare at 83, Trayvon Diggs at 99, Sean Ryan. Ryan, right?
Yeah, he had a Ryan on there. He was one of the Ryan guys.
Yeah, so he's just chock full of Green Bay Packers on his list. 4 in the top 20 and 7 if you include Diggs, who's obviously not comp pick worthy or eligible for Green Bay, but 7 Packers in the top 100 if you count Diggs.
There's a lot of that, man. Quay is wrote about it. Quay's the most polarizing guy. There are Kingsley, Enigbare, and Sean Ryan guys in terms of the free agent rankings. Like top 100s don't have them, but some of them do.
He had Quay over Devin Lloyd. He had Quay at 10, Lloyd at 16.
Lloyd is going to get paid more. I will tell you that. Lloyd's camp thinks he's getting Lloyd's going to get paid more.
Oh yeah, for sure. I totally
Lloyd's camp thinks he's getting 20. So. 20
a lot of potatoes.
Another thing I want to plug, going on Tyler Brooks show. Tyler writes for us at APC, best available on YouTube, and then Frozen Tundra Frequencies podcast network on wherever you find audio stuff, whether it's Spotify, iTunes, whatever. We're doing weekly breakdowns of position groups. We just got done with the offensive line. It went about as long as this podcast did. So if you want to hear some offensive line stuff, I've actually seen them and I'm ready to talk about the top 100 guys. After that, still need more work to do, which is hopefully free agency will tell me whether I need to start watching some of these positions or not. And the Kennard RFA tender or not tender can inform me on that too. So I can get my eyes in the right spot and not waste time.
Who knows what we're going to be talking about a week from now with, you know, potential cuts.
Dude, if we sign a slot defender, I'm going nuclear. I'm doing
a slot defender from the 49ers is what we need. That's the key demo.
No. Does Garoppolo count as a Niner?
Technically, no, I guess. He's not. He didn't come. He's on the Rams, right?
He's on the Rams, but he played for Kyle.
No, for sure. That was his most known, noteworthy, for sure. But technically coming from the Rams, I would say. You're talking about a quarterback who played for Shanahan and McVay? Why? No, there's no way Green Bay would have interest in that.
I don't think we're going to spend $5 million on a backup quarterback, but we'll see.
I also bet Garoppolo goes for more than $5 million, if I had to guess.
I mean, someone's got to play for the Jets.
Get after it. It's all going to be very interesting. Like I said, who knows what we'll be talking about a week from now. I can't wait. Go follow him at JUMOSQ, acmepackingcompany.com. Give him an extra shout out and just go do everything at Acme Packing Company for him joining me for way too long every single week and me stealing all of his time. Justice, I cannot thank you enough. Enjoy your week, my friend.
Go Pack, go.
Go Pack, go. We'll see you guys soon.